place in Southern Oregon that really crystallized all of this for me. Medford School District was successful in going out for a bond to build the first new high school in several decades. It was very exciting, and it was going to replace their dilapidated Southern Medford High School, South Medford High School. Kids were excited, community was excited, everybody was excited to enroll in this school. The summer comes, it's the week before school is going to start, and kids go back to enroll for the fall. And a family with a child with Down syndrome goes to the school to enroll, and it turns out this child is not going to be continuing as a member of the South Medford High School. Even though he was going to be a senior, even though he had attended South Medford High School, and that's where all of his friends were, he was an ESD student. He was enrolled in an ESD program called the STEPS program, and the decision had been made to keep that program at the old, dilapidated building. And nobody had remembered to let the families know. There was some question about who was responsible for informing these parents about exactly where it was that their students were going to go to school. Ultimately, the ESD superintendent took responsibility for that, but there was some finger-pointing for a time. As the parents went to complain about this total transformation and change of the educational placement of their students from being part of a self-contained classroom in a comprehensive community high school to being in a self-contained classroom in an old, dilapidated building that was also housing an alternative education program, and they would no longer have access to the things that were in that high school, they had difficulty figuring out who to complain to. They went to the ESD superintendent. They went to the school district superintendent. They testified to the ESD board of directors. They testified to the school district board of directors. Now, some people will tell you those families are now perfectly happy to have those kids in that classroom. I can tell you, hearing directly from those families, that that is not what those families are saying today. They would like for their children to be in a community high school where they have direct access to instruction in reading, math, social studies, and science. This happens all across the state. Earlier this week, I was visited by an ESD, several staff, and a superintendent, and they were describing to me the importance of their programs and the behavior management that they provided for students in their care, in their self-contained programs that were outside these student school districts. Very caring people, absolutely very caring people. But I asked the question, you told me about behavior management. Tell me a little bit about reading. Tell me about math. Tell me about social studies. There wasn't an answer. What I was told instead was that these students, if they were to be sent back to their local districts, would be loaded onto loading docks in the back of the school, that these were kids that schools did not want in their hallways. Colleagues, we cannot continue to allow this to happen. We cannot, in 2011, have a secret, hidden, separate system of education for students with disabilities, for students with mental health issues. We need for school districts to have the ability to take care of that. Now, quickly to touch on the fiscal reality, back to Southern Oregon ESD. Medford School District is contracting with Southern Oregon ESD so that Southern Oregon ESD could hire full-time teaching staff, full-time instructional staff, so that they could teach Medford students full-time in Medford School District buildings. I don't understand how that makes sense when there is a scarcity of resources. If the Southern Oregon ESD could hire those staff, so could the Medford School District provide those services to the same kids in the same place with the same staff, not have that administrative overhead, and provide more support services which would benefit the students and the overburdened staff that are providing those services. If you were to move forward with Senate Bill 250 and allow an opt-out for school districts, they would be able to mindfully choose which services they wanted to purchase from an ESD. It would create greater accountability both for that school district, who would now remember that they are a consumer of services and that that ESD is accountable to them for that quality of services, and it would be more clear to those families and students about who is accountable for that education. Today, because so many special education services are listed under the services that are part of the resolution plans, districts look only at those contracted dollars that they're paying out, the check that they write to the ESD to provide the services. We have to get back to looking at those resolution dollars. Dollar one is an educational dollar. Are we spending that dollar in the very best way we can for every single student in the state? Union Baker has been here, showed you how that impacts their special education programs. If they don't get their pass-through dollars, they will have to reduce their special education services to their students by a third. If we allow allowed other districts to opt out and use $1 in those resolution dollars to smartly educate their kids, the kids that belong in those districts. We can do better for kids, all kids, not just kids in special education. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Representative, thank you. Fair to say then, you know, we do get this complaint that all families with disabled children don't want to change the ESD system as it stands today. That is a pervasive complaint we get, so don't do that thing. You're here to say that flies in the face of reality.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can tell you, I think you all know I'm a person that has consistent and regular communication with families of children with disabilities in this state and across the country, and families that express satisfaction with services provided by an ESD, in my experience, are in the vast minority. I would ask you to look at who is bringing you information that says that families are satisfied. Are you hearing that from families, or are you hearing that from others that may have a different interest?
Thank you. Questions or comments? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Gelser, for being here and for your testimony, which I found extremely enlightening. And I remember when Union Baker was here and what they talked about, but I also remember somebody from a very small district up on the McKenzie River, it might have even been the McKenzie District, who talked about how because that district is so small that if they didn't have the ability, if the ESD that they use was not there, they wouldn't be able to hire people full. They don't need full-time people. So how do you address the issue of those small districts if the large ESD is not available because so many districts opt out if Senate Bill 250 is in effect?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. I think you really have to look at the experience of those school districts in Union Baker County. They are kind of the epitome of what's described, very rural, very small school districts, and they did what superintendents do best. They were creative, they worked together, they used local resources, and they planned for their kids. If you were to pass Senate Bill 250 and districts were able to opt out, they could still purchase services from an ESD. They could purchase services from a neighboring school district or a school district nearby. Changing the way that we structure ESDs, how they function and how the money flows, does not eliminate the ability to share resources, work in collaboration, and build consortiums. It just says we're going to do it in a different way. At the end of the day, what we're doing right now isn't working for kids. The worst thing that we can do is do nothing to improve that.
Thank you.
Senator Shields.
Thank you, Senator Haas. I think, actually, I would agree with what you'd said. I would maybe limit the scope a little bit. I think what we also want to make sure we do is not make things worse. And
yes.
That's part of my concern with my school districts in Portland Public Schools, where, you know, I think the superintendent and board do as good a job as they can with the resources that they have. But I hear a lot of complaints about just general administration about Portland Public Schools over the years. And as I mentioned to the chair, I don't hear those about my ESD so much. And it could be because people don't understand the difference or the distinction. But I fear for the kids that things could actually get worse if Portland Public Schools is providing the services that they don't really have the expertise to do. Can you help me get to a better place on that? Do you have any experience with kids with disabilities in my district or nearby in Portland or Multnomah County?
Yes, thank you, Senator Haas, Senator Shields. Thank you for that very good question. Two points on that. The first is that Portland Public Schools does serve most of its students within its school district. The services that they choose to use from Multnomah ESD are primarily those support or those extra services that they purchase or that they buy. And that's probably why you don't hear a lot of complaints from school-aged families of kids in ESDs in Portland Public Schools, because that's not the primary administrator of those programs. However, you probably do hear a lot of complaints because there are significant issues in Portland Public Schools. The vast majority of the schools, I think less than a quarter of them, are accessible, so you have children that can't even get into the schools. You have kids who by the third grade may have had to change school building up to four times over the course of three to 4 years. The graduation rates for students with disabilities in Portland Public Schools are among the lowest in the state, so there are certainly challenges there. I don't think that would be made worse by this change. The other thing that I would point out is that there is an assumption of the quality of service that is provided by ESDs and the safety, especially of some of these very significantly disabled children. I would point to one of them in the Multnomah ESD, I believe it's Pathways Community School. One of the issues that's currently in the newspaper right now is a severely disabled child, according to the press reports and the lawsuit that has been filed, was left unattended in a lunchroom, is a tube-fed child, was left alone with a hamburger, and he choked and died. That same school a couple of years ago, again, had a child, 40 students in the school, come home with a broken ankle. So I don't know that the argument can be made that the kids are necessarily safer in these schools, and we don't know, because when they're out there, there's not nearly as much accountability or spotlight on these schools because they aren't the neighborhood school that everyone sees. We end up not seeing the problems for these kids and these families. And those families don't know where to go to ask for help when things aren't working right for their kids.
Okay. Philip, some of the schools that are run by the MESD have very solid reputations, like Helen's View, and I don't, like I said, my constituents are not shy about complaining. and I don't generally hear complaints about them. One of my concerns is, and it's not necessarily with this administration at Portland Public Schools, but let's say 5 years down the road, times get tough, the school board's looking around, where can we get some more money? They decide potentially to opt out, and jump in if I'm reading the bill wrong, but if they decide to opt out and to try to take the money from the Multnomah ESD, try to use those services, that's where my big concern might be, where you had suggested that they're not doing a very good job now for disabled kids, and in my view, you know, if they decide that they wanted to start, you know, running the nursing programs themselves or doing all these things, it could actually get worse, and also get worse for the surrounding districts if Portland Public Schools is not very good at shelling out the money to provide services to, say, Park Rose School District next time. I don't have strong feelings about this, and I'm not trying to advocate
the
bill, but I'm really struggling with these issues and wondering if there are ways that we can get to yes on this that could assuage those concerns about what might happen to in an administration where they say, you know, we could really use that $60 million and we're going to take it. And anyway, that's all I have to say.
And Senator Haas, Senator Shields, I think that those are very good points. What I would point out and ask that people remember in all of these deliberations is that ultimately these students, whether we're under this model or a different model, are the responsibility of the local school district in which they live. They are ultimately not the responsibility of the education service district. They are ultimately the responsibility of that school district. There will continue to be requirements upon that school district for maintenance of effort and the expenditure of funds on special education services. So even if the dollars weren't going to the ESD, you couldn't just unilaterally diminish. You shouldn't be able to, under the law, unilaterally diminish the services that are provided to students based on a budget transfer. But what this would do, again, whether it's this mechanism or something else, is really remind everyone, including those families, the superintendents, the school boards, that these students are not ESD students. They are Philomath School students. They are Albany students. They are Portland students. They are Gresham-Barlow students. And they are students first. And they should have the ability to access the school that's right in the neighborhood that they live in, that their brothers and sisters attend. And this system makes it harder for them to do that.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, I guess at the end of the day, the school board then would be democratically accountable to, and we could complain to school board members as easily as we could to the MESD elected officials. So, again, I'm not saying that I'm opposed to the bill, but I'm just really, I'm just worried. That's all.
No, it's a pretty thorny thicket. Thank you for your questions. Other comments, questions? Well, Representative Gelser, thank you for your appearance and for your advocacy and giving voice to these families.
Well, thank you for your invitation. It's always good to visit, and I hope you'll come see us sometime.
We're in a work session on Senate Bill 250. We've had a public hearing. We probably will have another one. And the purpose of this is for us to discuss and go through a long list of amendments that we have. It's just going to take another, we'll probably use up all of our time. Having said that, we do have a note here, and I know that there are some guys here who have traveled a ways to be here, and I don't want to have you come all the way over here from the Wallawas, one of my favorite places on the planet, and not be heard. So if you gentlemen can come up here and be very brief, like a minute or two each, couple minutes, then I'd love to have.
Thank you, Senator Hass, for allowing us to speak.
Sure.
I sure appreciate it.
Yes, we do. I'm sorry, we were under the impression that this was not a work session, but a hearing on the bill, so it's our fault.
No problem. Just start off with your name and where you're from.
My name is Edward Jensen. I'm the superintendent of the Wallawa ESD, which is in northeast Oregon. It's actually located in Enterprise, but we serve Troy, we serve Enterprise, we serve Joseph, and we serve Wallawa school districts.
My name is Robert Waltenberg, and I'm the 10% superintendent for Grant ESD, 90% tech guy.
My name is Mike Carroll, and I'm the superintendent for North Central ESD, which serves Wheeler, Gillam, and Sherman counties.
What I'd like to address, Mr. Chairman, is Senate Bill 250, and I want to be clear that I'm in opposition to the bill, but I'd like to explain why I'm in opposition of the bill, if I may. And I'll try to make it as brief as possible. First of all, opt-out for us isn't an issue, and we see it as unnecessary. I'll give you a case in point. We had a speech therapist position open, and we didn't have a speech therapist to fill that position. So we went to Walla Walla General Hospital to purchase their time. And the conditions of that were, yes, we'll be glad to do it for you, but it's due to the weather, whether we can get them there. Plus, the cost was actually more than what it was if I could find my own or grow my own. I went to Umatilla Morrow ESD, and they were more than willing to help us, but the condition was if we can get across the passes for a major portion of our winter months. So we developed our own. We paid for our own to be our own SLP. We also paid for two SLPAs to be developed so that we could provide those services. If a school district would opt out, the money that I use for that, I have no way of maintaining those services because the money would not be there to pay for that service. The same way is with the school psychologist. We have that issue. In the same way with technology, we do business services for all of the schools. One other concern I had is on page 4, lines 13 through 15, it addresses the superintendents being board members. Presently, I am the board member of the Troy School District. I have been also not only the superintendent of Wallawa ESD, but the superintendent of Wallawa. And I have been still the superintendent of Troy. How would we handle those kind of conflicts that are in that bill? We have 7 elected people in our county, and they represent 7 different zones. And I feel, and they would feel as well, to tell you this, that they feel like they're representing the people well of the county and representing the school districts. We sent you and submitted a letter to you last work session from the other superintendents in the county expressing the fact that we do provide the services they want, not the services that we deem that we think is the important ones that they have. So we have lots of input, and as far as
the reading that the bill would not require an opt-out, you know that.
I'm sorry?
It would not require your schools to opt-out.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. I'm done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Robert Waltenberg, and I'm the 10% superintendent, 90% tech guy for Grant ESD, and I'm here to testify in opposition of 250, and hopefully this will explain my opposition. We are an ESD that serves 5 small school districts in Frontier, Oregon. We're remote rural communities that enjoy a close-knit relationship, sharing the common goal of educating kids. Senate Bill 250 is a solution to a problem that really doesn't exist for us. I don't presume to know what it takes to run a large ESD and maintain those relationships with large school districts, but I do know small ESDs and I know small schools. Case in point, John Day School District used to receive support from Grand ESD in special ed, but also maintained their own small special ed program. They approached us in 2003, wanting us to flow through dollars to them so that the ESD employees would become their employees. This would allow the district to supervise all special ed operations under one umbrella, and it would also eliminate two separate bargaining units working within the same classroom. We agreed to that. So we now flow through dollars for these special ed teachers and numerous aides, but we do have a caveat to that, that those dollars don't backfill John Day's budget in any way, in that it doesn't support the administration of John Day schools. So those monies are going to the classrooms. That's a solution that we came up with. I use this example to illustrate that in our ESD, we worked to tailor solutions that work for us in our school districts. Senate Bill 250 presents a solution to problems that really don't exist in our ESD. Problems may exist in Baker County, but we don't see these. From our perspective, it's unnecessary legislation. Thank you for listening to me and giving me the opportunity to speak.
Mr. Chair, committee members, again, I'm Mike Carroll from North Central ESD, and I am speaking in opposition to Senate Bill 250. And I, along with Robert, do not presume to tell you how that we should create solutions to problems for larger ESDs, but because I've worked in small schools and small ESDs, I feel like I have some experience and some good feel for what it takes to make those work. I see this bill as full of some potential problems. One would be the ESD. If a district opt out that the ESD property was in, the real property was, then how would you deal with that? That would definitely cause some problems and time taken away from schools. The other thing is the opt-in, opt-out. You can opt in 1 year, and then you can opt out, and then you can opt back in. And in small areas, it's really difficult for us to get specialized to people to work with special needs students. And so 1 year you need them, next year you don't, because this district or that district opt in, but then they opt back out, and then they opt back in. So there's just some problems there that I think it creates that we don't need, because we do deal with the problems with that. And just to give you two quick examples, 2 years ago, our districts were having some problems with our delivery of special ed services. And so we sat down and worked together about a plan that involved the using of ARRA money, IDEA money, and resolution dollars to provide all of the speech language, special ed teachers, and instructional assistants for 5 of our 6 districts and for 90% of the 6th district at no cost to those school districts. And then another example is that this year we had some differences of needs in the area of school improvement. So we set up a 4-option situation where they had different ways they could use their money or different ways we could use the person that we have. So that the smaller school districts really make it, our smaller ESDs really work well. And we don't have a whole lot of extra money other than just our state-funded money. So therefore, our districts are very involved in that whole process and have a lot to say about it, and it's their decision. I mean, we work together with them. And we do this basically, provide these services with no cost to them at all. Or in some cases, if they have extra needs and they want to purchase them, of course, they do that on their own. But we do that with no cost. And so I thank you for your time, and I would ask you to please consider that one size does not fit all when we're talking about ESDs. We're very different from Multnomah and Northwest Regional in our part of the state, and especially our size of ESDs. And we feel that we can handle our problems and work through them as well as, and probably better in many cases than district, small school districts of 150 to 250 students who are a long ways apart and don't have that ability as easily coordinate and solve their problems. So again, thank you very much for your time.
Senator Jordan. Gentlemen, I guess I'm trying to, this is an optional bill, and as long as you have a lot of support in your community for the ESD, it wouldn't even affect your ESDs at all. I mean, this is basically for those situations where people are really unhappy with the performance they're getting. It sounds like there's a lot of community involvement in your communities, and there's a lot of interaction between the ESD and the school districts, and they're all small school districts. So I guess I'm trying to figure out what could possibly be your motivation if all your school districts are very supportive of what you're doing. They're all small, and they're all looking to the ESD for service. There's no there's no threat here whatsoever to any ESD that's doing a great job.
Senator Hass, Senator George, you're right. You are correct. We're pretty neutral. The issue that I have in my county, and I'd like to speak candidly, is that at times we will receive, we'll get superintendents in our counties. In the last 20 years that I've been in Grant County, we've had probably over 35 superintendents roll through in those districts. So the relationships we build with those schools, between the school districts and the ESDs, a lot of times depend on those relationships between the ESD superintendent and that new superintendent that comes into the schools. I don't know how to say this politically correctly, but sometimes we get guys that are just think they know how to do whatever that is, and we may have been for 10 years building relationships that benefit the kids, and then in 1 year this individual may be able to destroy that relationship, and then they leave. And so then our kids suffer for a couple, 3 years until we can build that relationship back up. For example, we have a we may have a superintendent that knows special ed very well and is able, very capable, very able to provide those special ed services in a school of 35 kids. But the next year when that superintendent moves on to whatever district outside of our county, then that district is left with a hole in their special ed. So we want to maintain that continuity for them.
So, George.
Part of the idea of this bill would be is that those superintendents would now be part of the board. And so you get that cooperation. Even if you had somebody who was rogue, they would now be part of the team. The idea is to bring the school districts closer to the ESD and the ESD closer to school districts. So that's the first thing I have here. The second thing is I'm brand new to this committee. So I come to this just trying to listen to what's going on. I'm unfamiliar with the issue. What's been interesting to me is that we've had huge ESDs that come in and says if one school district left, it would totally make the ESD worthless because we wouldn't get economies of scale. Then you guys come in, and I go to Wheeler County often, and I go out to Central Oregon and Eastern Oregon often, and these are your ESDs are very, very small. And so it seems like the whole argument is like if I'm talking with small schools, it's like, well, we're the small little ESD, but we're doing a great job because we're small. And then these bigger ESDs say, we're doing a great job, and if you dare take out even one school, it'll destroy the whole ESD. And I got to find out all these arguments sort of in defense of the status quo all seem in conflict to me. Like, not all of these things can be true. And I'm trying to objectively look at this. And so I'm looking at you guys thinking to yourself, you're exactly the reason why this bill would work. Meaning, your small ESDs who are innovative and creative and work closely with the school districts, and that's what we're trying to create. You guys are exactly what we're trying to get to with this kind of piece of legislation. And these big school districts, if they pulled out, you would still be able, you guys are proof that you'd be able to create ESDs that work for small schools. So I just think this bill gives you a lot more flexibility and a lot more creativity, and maybe you can comment on that. Because I got to tell you, I'm completely puzzled by the testimony of all the people who are in defense of the current status quo, because none of them are, you can't put them all together and come up with a consistent view of ESD. So comment if you would.
Sure. Senator Hass, Senator George, you're right. You are very right. We are, I don't want to sound.
Second time you said that about you.
I know.
And on this committee, too. It's hard to believe.
The issue is, does Portland Public School need, Portland Public Schools, do they need an ESD? I don't know. I can't speak to that. But I can speak to the fact that Dayville School District, where I have a 15-year-old and a 12-year-old, they need an ESD to provide. We do 100% of the technology for our county. We've got five school districts being served by our technology department. We have five school districts being served by our special ed. We have three school districts being served by our business functions. We have five school districts being served by our SLP. There's that economy that we can create within our geographic boundaries.
How many students?
About 1,000 kids total. And so,
and that's sort of my point, though.
Sure, sure. But the issue becomes if, for example, John Day became decided for whatever reason, and I do not believe that this will happen, but maybe they get a new superintendent that decides, you know what, we can do all of this by ourselves. So there I have 60% of my school fund going to John Day, which chances are they're going to buy it back from me anyways, because I'm the only game in town at that point. But where does Dayville sit with 8% of my budget? Where does Monument sit with 8% of my budget? Where does Long Creek sit with 7% of my budget? If, for whatever reason, John Day takes that 60% of their, what their money leaves, and I say, okay, SLP, I can only afford to buy you for 40% of the time, and my SLP says I can't live at 40% of your time, so therefore I lose people. And so that's where it's at. But in answer to your question, maybe the big districts don't need ESC. I don't know. I can't speak to that, but I know that my small districts do need me.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for allowing us to speak.
Safe travels. Okay. From the Department of Education, Brian Reeder and Cindy Hunt. Committee, we're going to go through these amendments one by one. First, Brian Reeder has some charts to show us on, I think, an issue that we've been struggling with for a while, and that is the issue of whether big districts subsidize smaller ones or vice versa. And we have some handouts, I think. Do we have copies of those? Welcome, both of you.
Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, Brian Reeder, Assistant Superintendent with the Department of Education. one of the key issues in the ESD reform discussion is the issue of opt-out. And that brings up a number of other issues. The key one is if a large district opts out of an ESD, how does that affect the ability of the ESD to provide services to the remaining districts? In many cases, those districts being much smaller than the one that opted out. And what we've heard from a number of ESDs is that the revenue generated for the ESD, it comes to the ESDs in proportion to the ADMW of their component school districts. And what we've heard is that in the delivery of ESD services, many ESDs in effect take the resources that are brought into them by large districts and they use them to subsidize services for smaller districts. In other words, a large ESD may be responsible for bringing in 20% of the revenue to their ESD, but that large district may only get 15% of the services that the ESD generates, and the ESD uses the excess from that large district to subsidize services for the smaller ones. So what I did was to try to test that hypothesis that there's this subsidy going on from large to small districts in the provision of ESD services. And so the table that I provided here, this is data from the 08-09 school year. And these are data that are reported to the Department of Education by ESDs. And the key pieces here are the two columns labeled services and cash. ESDs provide services to their districts, and in many cases they also just flow through dollars to their districts. And so we want to take account of both of those. Now, on the services side, we ask ESDs to estimate to their best ability the value of the services that they provide to each of their districts. And so that's what that column is, and then the final column is the sum of those two. So what I'm going to do here is sort of try and test this idea that we have this subsidy going on from large to small. And the way I do that is I calculate a correlation coefficient between district size as measured by ADMW and the total value of both services and cash that each district gets per ADMW. And what we're looking for here, a correlation coefficient varies between positive 1 and negative 1. And so a coefficient that's close to positive 1 means that a large district would get more services per student and smalls would get fewer services per student. That would be on the positive side of this correlation coefficient. On the negative side, that would indicate that small districts get more services per student and larger districts get fewer services per student. So a negative value on these coefficients would indicate the presence of this subsidy from big to small. And the higher the coefficient, in other words, the closer it is to positive one or the closer it is to negative one, the stronger that relationship. So just as an example, the first one on here is the Clackamas ESD, and that coefficient is a negative 0.64. Now, 0.64 is relatively strong, not extremely strong, but moderately strong relationship, and it's negative, which says that these services per student, the smaller districts are getting higher levels of services per student, and you can see that in the numbers up above. The total per ADMW column, the smallest district, Colton, gets $533 per ADMW, the largest, North Clackamas, $286. So in the case of Clackamas ESD, the hypothesis that there's a subsidy going on appears to be supported by these data. Now, I will tell you, before I go any further, that there are some ESDs that have disputed the accuracy of these data. We collect these data from the ESDs, and we ask them, to the best of their ability, to tell us the values that they provide to each district. But some of those ESDs have said that these numbers really aren't a very accurate reflection of how that happens, that they report these data on and they simply allocate them by ADMW, not on how the services are actually provided. So that's a caveat to keep in mind. But if you go down through all 20 ESDs, what you'll notice is there are six of them that have negative coefficients that are relatively large. Five of them are larger than a negative 0.5, so that's a relatively strong relationship there that indicates this subsidy going on. The sixth one is at, and that's the last one, Northwest Regional at negative 0.33, so that's a weak to moderate relationship there. And if you look at the rest of them, they're either very close to zero or they're actually positive, which indicates that the big districts are getting higher levels of services per student than the small districts are. So in other words, a subsidy in the other direction, small districts subsidizing big districts.
So out of 20, you had how many where the bigs are subsidizing the smalls?
Out of 26, there were six that where the data support this subsidy of big to small, and 14 where the data really don't support that at all. So, you know, what this says is, a number of the other speakers brought this up, economies of scale. One of the issues is, first of all, if a big district opts out and they have been subsidizing the smaller districts, that may leave the ESD in a position where they can't provide the same level of service to the small remaining districts that they did before. And if at the same time they lose economies of scale, then the cost of serving those smaller districts potentially could go up. What we don't know really is where these economies of scale kick in and where they sort of where they're fully realized and at what size you stop getting any more benefit of getting large. As we know, we've got ESDs over in the eastern part of the state that have fewer than 1,000 students. We have some that have a couple thousand students. That's awfully small. We have some here in the western side of the state that are over 100,000. And if they lost their largest district, they would still be over 50,000. So don't have a very good answer for just the nature of those economies of scale, but we do have a very wide range of sizes, and we would still have some quite large ESDs even if their largest district opted out.
So, Brian, in the case of Salem Kaiser, for example, if they were to opt out of WESD, in your example here, this would be one of the six, but negative 0.0087.
Well, no, that's not one of the six. That's very close to zero.
Yes.
So that's really no correlation at all for Willamette.
That's my point.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, this is very interesting. Questions?
Senator Morris?
Well, I might reserve my comments when we get into the amendments.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is a very, very complex issue. The services that are provided, and for us to try to rationalize and make informed judgments is very difficult. And I think maybe there are some solutions that will emerge in the amendments. But I do have one question, Brian, and that is, this is based on ADM total per ADM students, and is the distribution of special needs necessarily equal between all of these districts?
Chair Haas, Senator Morris, these are ADMW, so the added weights for special needs students are in here.
So they are calculated.
They are in here, yes. Now, obviously, not all special needs students have the same requirements, but they all get the same extra weight. So, you know, we may see more very high need special needs students in some districts relative to others, but the weighting is in here, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Senator George, please.
Yeah, thank you, and I'm sorry I had to step out as part of your testimony, so I hope this wasn't done before. What I just heard in testimony a few minutes ago is that a viable ESD is 1,000 students. Anything above 1,000 students is a viable ESD. And when you start looking at the amount we spend per student, and you go to Union Baker, their average is very, very low, even though they don't have that many students. So I'm trying to figure out, I mean, the real question here is, the only question that we should really, seems like to me, is the core is it what is a viable ESD? How many students do you need before you have a viable ESD? And it looks like to me Union Baker answers that question at somewhere in the neighborhood of about 4,000 students. But we also heard that a 1,000 student ESD is a very viable unit, which means that people could come in and out of these things and there would be viability no matter what. And it doesn't seem to, I mean, according to this, doesn't seem to change dramatically the cost we're spending per student.
Chair Haas, Senator George, I think the term viability is a good one in terms of whether an ESD can actually exist and offer services to their districts that are valuable. But what I think we would also observe is that the level of services that a district, that an ESD is able to provide for, you know, on the order of $300 to $400 per weighted student may vary tremendously around the state. I believe there are economies of scale. That doesn't mean a really small one isn't viable, but they most likely operate at a much higher cost. These numbers are not really cost numbers, they are funding numbers. So, you know, you may get a lot more services for your dollar in one ESD versus the other, and size may have an impact on that. I mean, I think some of the work that we've done here in Oregon on school district size suggests that you reach your most efficient size for a district at somewhere around 8,000 to 10,000 students. That smaller than that, your costs are a little bit higher. If you're very, very small, your costs can be quite high. But getting larger than 8,000 for a school district doesn't lower your per unit, per student costs very much at all. That, I suspect, is true for ESDs also, but we don't know exactly where that size, that minimum, or that optimal size ESD really is.
There, Jordan.
Well, okay, so if you could go to your back two pages here that are open. I look at the Multnomah ESD, which is, you know, whatever that is, 80,000, 90,000 students in that ESD. And then across the page, you have Union Baker. When you look at the funding level for Union Baker per student is significantly less. I mean, just looking at that, I mean, obviously this isn't true, but if you just looked at that, it would be cheaper to make ESDs smaller based on what I'm seeing in this data right here, which means that this is what's frustrating about this discussion is that what we're trying to do is figure out how we optimize service and value. It seems like to me that what we need is a number that tells me how I optimize the dollars per. And so when I look at Union Baker and they're spending what looks like to be an average, I mean, their revenue is somewhere in the neighborhood of $270, and they seem to be very, very happy with their service. They're over here glowing about it. And Multnomah County is saying, we just can't, you can't break us up because we need this economy as a scale. That seems to be false by these numbers. I mean, by just flat out, there's no way that can be true if these numbers are accurate.
Chair Haas, Senator George, I think, again, it's important to remember that these are funding numbers, not cost numbers. So what you're getting for $270 to $300 in Union Baker may be considerably different than what you can get for that same amount of money per student in Multnomah.
Okay.
Simply because things cost more in different geographic regions, things cost more at different sizes of delivery and so forth. So simply looking at the funding levels of the two places doesn't really get at the value question. You may get a lot more value in one of these places than in the other for the same amount of spending. It's like buying food in a very rural area where much of the food that isn't produced locally has to be brought in. You may pay more for some sort of exotic food out in rural Oregon because of transportation costs. And you would pay less for it in Portland because, you know, there's a larger market and the transportation costs may be lower. You may spend the same in both places, but you get more of it in Portland for your dollar than you do out in rural Oregon. So you have to look at not only how much you're spending, but what you're getting in return for it. But I do agree with your point that, you know, I think history tells us that these very small ESDs are viable, but they simply may not be providing the same level of services per dollar as the larger ones. Those are the relationships that are important to understand, but I don't believe we have the analysis to really to hit that nail on the head yet.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris.
Thank you. Brian, if I could direct you to the Union Baker ESD Elgin, 609 students, and the Region 18 ESD Enterprise. Both districts are similar in size. Enterprise has $557, ADM, and Elgin has $274. Enterprise and Elgin aren't very far apart. And that gets, I think, to your question, Senator George, to explain why such a difference in funding levels. And I guess it begs the question, why do we need a separate ESD for those four schools when they're so closely connected to Union Baker?
No. Chair Haas, Senator Morris, the answer to why they have different funding levels is easy, and that is that Region 18 will allow is subject to the $1 million floor.
Oh, okay.
And Union Baker is not. So, I mean, the formula by itself would give allow a less than $1 million, but then we apply the $1 million floor, and they get more money.
Follow-up? Are we underserving, then, the children in Union Baker?
Chair Haas, Senator Morris, I don't know the answer to that.
I know it's a rhetorical question. I apologize for asking it, but that's the problem of these flat funding levels and floors. Some students are getting better service than others.
Mm-hmm. Cindy Hunt, Oregon Department of Education. Chair Haas, Senator Morris, and Senator George, I think there's also another piece of information that may be illuminating. Union Baker merged with Umatilla Morrow last year, and so as of July 1st of this year, there's going to be a new ESD out there called the Intermountain ESD, and that was done for a number of reasons, but some of the primary reasons was that Union Baker had many financial issues and other issues that I know that some of you have probably read about. And so Union Baker is not necessarily the best example because they're going away, and, you know, for various reasons. And we're going to see a new entity out there starting on July 1st.
Cindy, what are your thoughts? Do you advocate keeping the $1 million floor, lowering it, adjusting it?
Yeah, Chair Haas, with the $1 million floor, as
you know, the bill that's in front of you allows for optional opt-out. At some point, if you have a number of districts opting out of an ESD, no matter what its size is now, you get to a point where there's going to be so few students that, you know, you have this viability question. I think Brian has talked about that a bit today. What is that viability question? But you also have a question of how much money do they need to function? And so by keeping the $1 million floor, you are keeping some of those ESDs. But as you're allowing opt-out, I think that you will see some ESDs reach the $1 million floor more than what we have now. So it is an issue generally with opt-out to keep in mind.
Yeah, Senator George.
Cindy, that sort of begs my question. It seems like to me it'd be a fairly easy formula to figure out how much overhead you need per student and where that point is that you sort of get to it. I mean, we just heard testimony. We have very, very good ESDs where everybody's really happy with the service at 1,000 students, which means that at least in me establishes some kind of floor. Now, is that a cost-effective thing? Well, that's a different question. But the ESD is effective at 1,000 students. Now, then the next analysis is that what is the actual point where you start to see a moderation of the actual overhead allocation per student? So that seems like it would also be an easy calculation that each ESD should be able to tell us what their overhead is and what they actually provide to students, and we should be able to figure out from each ESD what their overhead allocation is per student and figure out is there a break-even point of, let's say, and I'm guessing, based on some of these, just kind of looking at some of these revenue numbers, which is difficult, but it's probably like 2,500 students is, I'm guessing, where it would be. So then that kind of gives us our answer. I mean, you see what I'm saying? There's two sides of this. One is...
Yeah.
Overhead allocation, and one is viability. And we clearly know viability is 1,000 students, because we just heard testimony. Then the question is, what's the overhead allocation? And that seems to be a fairly easy thing to come up with also.
Yeah. Senator George, Chair Haas, I can tell you how the legislature answered that question a few years ago, which is now under the statutes, it says that 90% of the funding for ESDs has to be passed through to the districts as through the local service plans. So the legislature answered that question with 10%. I mean, that's a simple answer, and the legislature's always right, so there you go.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. If it's okay, I'd like you just to stand by as we go through some of these amendments.
Sure.
Linda has passed out. I think everybody has a copy of the dash sixes, the dash sevens.
Sent to you electronically.
Yeah, the dash six is 46 pages. You might not have printed it out. But Linda has thoughtfully given us kind of a cheat sheet, a section-by-section breakdown on the dash sixes. Cindy, since you were essential in helping us draft these, maybe you could come up and stand by as we go up here. Yeah. You want it? Yeah, give it to her. Yeah. Let's just start with section two.
It's the dash six.
On the dash six, section two. This is the actual process of opting out. Mm-hmm. School district must prepare a plan, public plan, hold hearings, solicit comments, that process spelled out. It must make its decision based upon a two-thirds vote of its school board. It must submit its plan to the ESD board of directors and component school district boards. And it must be in by October 1st of the previous year. There is a dash 4 amendment, I think, that is in concert with this, that eliminates the appeal rights for component school districts. And then within 100 days of receiving the plan, the EWSD Board of Directors shall issue an order that recognizes the withdrawal. It becomes effective July after the order is issued by the Board of Directors for the ESD. I guess I'd ask you to comment since you helped us
Chair Haas, a couple of differences in this section from the bill is that one of the things that it moves up the date to October 1st when they have to submit their plans. We think that that's important because we want not just the school district that's opting out the amount of time to plan for that, to get their contracts in place, get their staff in place, that kind of thing, but we also think it's important for the remaining ESD, you know, to be able to plan for their budget because they've seen a major shift, likely. So October 1st was important. I think the original bill said March 1st, and then that also allows, like I said, for this timing, and it's hopefully a more thoughtful process. And then with the appeals mechanism, I think the original bill talked about appealing to the state board and that kind of thing, which also added to the fiscal of the bill. So this would have less of a fiscal impact, frankly.
Okay. Does this section incorporate the dash fours, or would we need the dash fours?
This section looks complete to me. I think the dash fours are somewhat different.
Okay.
I think the dash fours still allow a limited appeal.
Okay. Comments or questions on this fairly key section? Okay. Section 3, ESD Board of Directors cannot issue an order recognizing the withdrawal if the withdrawal would become effective prior to July 2013. This, Cindy, does what?
Yeah, the original bill allowed the opt-out right away, as early as this October. I believe that this allows for the withdrawal or the opt-out to be later, as late as July 1st, 2013. So the first plan would be submitted October 1st of 2013. And one issue with this is that one of the concerns of the Department of Education is that some of the rapid changes, and I think you've heard some of the fears about allowing everyone to opt out would be too rapid, and there's some fear of harming the existing districts and so forth. This allows a more graduated, you know, it's the hope would be that if the opt-out is kind of in the future, that the ESDs would be working with the districts in the meantime to try to mitigate that, and we wouldn't see as many opt-out in 2 years.
So, and then Section 4, then, Section 3, 4, and 5 are similar in that they're spelling out this process of coming in or out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a district that opts out can come back in. And I think that was a concept in the original bill as well.
Mm-hmm. And what do we do? I know we've talked about this where Beaverton wants some services but not others. Is that an opt-out?
One of the things, and I'm looking here into the amendments, but I know one of the things that was discussed was this concept of pass-through funds. So they don't completely, I don't know if that I'd called an opt-out. It's more, we've heard the concept of pass-through funds. I know in front of the committee, the people from Baker talked about pass-through funds. But right now, that's at the option of the ESD. So some of the concepts that have been discussed is allowing a percentage of pass-through funds that the school district and would negotiate. And so that would be the example from Beaverton. But I would also envision under an opt-out situation that you may see some negotiations going on where some districts don't want to completely opt out. You know, they see value in their ESD services. So you would see perhaps more pass-through dollars and that kind of thing, more creative kind of solutions.
Okay. And Section 10, this is the money section, if you could explain it and tell us about the South Consortium provision.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I skipped Section 6 of the dash sixes.
Okay.
This is the governance issue, and I should say this is partly stole from the House bill. Representative Comp has asked us to merge her bill into this. This is primarily what that bill does. I think it was House Bill 2118.
Mm-hmm.
And deletes the elections of ESD board members and changes it to this.
Yeah, I think one of the changes from the other bill that you mentioned is in that bill, I think every single superintendent was on the board. Some of our ESDs have as many as 30 school districts or 40 school districts, so that would become an unworkable board. We also have some ESD superintendents, and I think you heard from some of them today, that they share a superintendency with some of their component school districts, so part of their time is an ESD soup and part of their time is a school district soup, so that would create kind of a conflict being on the board and that kind of thing. So one of the things that this does is avoid some of those conflicts. Although one of the issues that also has been raised out there that I don't quite see it addressed here is that there's a concern about public meetings because many of the superintendents currently get together and talk about issues in their region. And if they were to do that and they served on this board, they'd have to be aware of public meetings kinds of laws. So one idea would be to have the board have a little more flexibility about who's on it. But
Mr. Chair.
The board.
Would it make more sense to have the selection from the participating district's board members who are elected to be chosen to serve on the ESD board rather than the superintendents, and then make the superintendents be on the budget committee? I would just flip-flop those two if it was my choice, because I think we're talking about a lot of dollars. And I think there is a measure of elected representation that would be important to be maintained in the ESDs.
Cindy?
Just a thought.
Chair Haas, Senator Morse, you know, I think that's a policy choice for the legislature. I mean, as far as the Department of Ed, we're neutral on those kinds of issues. I mean, we want definitely workable boards and workable, you know, budget committees. We think it's important that school districts, you know, have a say in their operations at ESDs, but there's several ways of making that happen. Yes. You know, whether it's some combination of, you know, representatives of school districts serving on the budget committee versus, you know, the ESD board, or splitting that so that the school districts have a say. There's several ways of doing that.
It's, I guess it's a matter, Senator Morris, of who, you know, where the accountability should rest on financial issues.
And, Mr. Chair, ultimately that accountability should rest and reside back to the elected representatives of those districts.
Okay. Section 10. Cindy, I'll let you go to the South Consortium provision. Does she have one?
She doesn't. Thought she was in.
Give you the sheet
yeah.
that we're using here.
Oh, thanks.
Did I take yours, Linda?
So my assumption on this is that this was meant to address some of the issues that were raised by the Baker folks that were testifying, that they were getting pass-through dollars and they wanted to continue those dollars, although this says that this was directed at the South Consortium, so perhaps they're getting a similar situation. I'm not sure, but...
Okay. Andy?
Okay.
You want to come up? Name and ID for the record.
Andy Smith, staff member for Senator Haas.
This came as a result of the testimony from the Baker County.
It did.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Yes, at the end of that testimony, you may recall the Baker folks basically asked to help them or continue their situation. Earlier in the committee, remember, I said that Union Baker is merging with Umatilla Morrow as of July 1st. And My understanding is that after that merger, the new ESD will not be necessarily continuing those pass-through dollars. And so that's what I think the Baker folks were talking about in their testimony and that kind of thing. So this is meant to continue that pass-through.
Okay.
As they've been doing.
Okay. The section in 11, it gets to the property issue that was brought up by one of the Willauer County guys.
Yeah. The in section 11, the original bill, if a school district decided to opt out, the default was that the property, that the ESD property that was located within the school district, would go with the school district. Many of our ESDs, including the one that we're sitting in, the ESD property is located in the largest school district. Most of Willamette ESD's property is located in Salem-Keizer. So if that property were to go with Salem-Keizer, Willamette ESD would be left, I believe, with very few buildings, if any. So this section shifted that around to say that if a school district does decide to opt out, it doesn't automatically get the ESD property that's within the boundaries. They can negotiate for that, but the default is that the ESD gets to keep the property. And that's also keeping with, for example, if the ESD is paying back bonds on the property, they would still have to be paying those bonds back. It's still their obligation. So this allows for some negotiation, but the default is the ESD keeps it.
Well, that begs the question of whether there's really negotiation. Because the way it's written, it would automatically default to the ESD, even though a district might disagree.
Correct.
So the fact that it says, requires, agreement, but if you disagree, then the other party has 100% of the authority to make the decision. That's not negotiation.
Right. Chair Haas, Senator Morse, as we look across the state, when we were looking at those ESDs that, frankly, were more likely to have a large district opt out, the property does tend to be located in the large district. And if there's an interest in keeping the remaining ESD as viable, they're going to need their property. So that's, one of those, policy choices for the committee, but that's one of the issues. And as we're looking at, when you look at Multnomah ESD, for example, most of the property, I think, is in Portland. You just kind of go down the list, lanes, and,
And if it's not, I think in Beaverton and the Northwest Regional Headquarters is in Hillsboro, so
yeah,
how would that work?
So for example, if a school district opted out and there's no ESD property, it's not an issue.
Okay.
There's no negotiation. But the original bill raised the issue because we do know that there is some real property, of the ESD located within presumably some districts who may want to opt out. So it becomes an issue. And, and the policy choice becomes, where do you want the property to remain? But realizing that presumably, the ESD that's left there, we want them to continue to function. So they would need some property.
Thank you. I'm trying to understand how this would work, especially when I'm putting on top of it trying to understand the opt-in and opt-out and how complicated this could possibly be. So could you give us an example of a situation where you said that the ESD is located in the school district? Okay, so who owns the property now? Is it the school district's property, but the ESD owns the building? I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, Senator Bonamici, Chair Haas, let me be clear. So where we're sitting in Salem right now, we are in the Salem-Keizer School District, but we're also within the Willamette ESD. Both of them have borders. Salem-Keizer School District has a border that's within Willamette ESD, which has the larger border, because Willamette extends into Polk County and Yamhill, and also has, school districts, Woodburns, Silverton, etc. And so when you look at property, Willamette ESD has a building that's right down the street. You can almost see it here from the window. And that property technically is sitting within Willamette ESD, but it's also sitting within the Salem-Keizer School District. But I believe it is owned right now by Willamette ESD. So in the original bill, it assumed that if Salem Kaiser were to opt out, they would get that property that is currently owned by Willamette ESD. And so they would take that, the property, the ownership would transfer to them. And so one of the issues with that is that for some of our ESDs, the majority of their property, their offices, et cetera, are located in very big school districts that are potentials, I guess, is for opting out.
Senator George.
So but what you're saying is the property currently belongs to the ESD. Who's the actual, who actually has title to the property?
The ESD.
So are there property, so the original bill basically said that the ESD would have had to deed over its its property to the school districts that opted out.
Yeah, Senator George, Chair House, I believe the original bill said that they would negotiate, but if they couldn't negotiate, the default was it would go to the school district.
Okay.
So this switches that. They negotiate, but the default is it stays with the ESD.
Okay.
I guess, Mr. Chair, we're getting deep into the weeds here.
Yes, you are.
But there is an equity issue. Who paid for that investment? And if, in the case of bonds, and I don't know whether there are bonds that are remaining, is the departing district still going to be paying, those citizens paying for the, an asset that would have no value to their students?
Yeah. Chair Haas, Senator Morris, I think the answer depends. And the reason I say that is that because if the property is already paid for, you know, then, you know, the upkeep, the maintenance, and so forth is not coming from the opt-out. You know, it's coming from the general fund and the state school fund and local property taxes and that kind of thing. But if the property, if there's a bond measure in place that the ESD is paying back, it's those taxpayers of that ESD that are paying back that bond measure. So that's regardless of the opt-out.
So the citizens of Salem Kaiser, to follow up, would be paying for something they're not using.
Senator Haas, Senator Morris, that's one way of looking at it. But, well, anyway, leave it at that.
Okay. Well, if these things were easy, they'd have been done by now. Senator Shield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So and I'm wondering how those kind of opt-out provisions change with the change or mesh with the change in governance structure. So in that scenario, the funds have gone over to the school district. The building, say, is still under the ESD. At least you have a democratically elected ESD board that will be overseeing that asset. But if we pass both of these amendments, the supervisory structure would then be the superintendents of the participating school districts or their elected officials. Am I reading that correctly?
Chair Haas, Senator Shields, you are reading that correctly. But I believe also in the bill, if you do opt out, if your district opts out, you're not considered to be a component district anymore, so you would not have a seat at the board,
okay,
on the board anymore.
Gotcha. Okay, that's what I missed. Thank you.
Okay. Section 12 gets at that issue, Cindy, of if the school district wants to do something else without a full withdrawal or opt-out, but decides it wants to buy its IT services from a private consultant, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chair Haas, where this would vary from current law is that right now, a school district can do that. I think you heard testimony from the Baker folks about this, but that's something that the ESD needs to give permission for.
That's just tacit approval over there.
And so this is shifts that to the school district. And we have other examples besides Baker. I keep using them because they're the ones that testified in front of you. But there's other examples in the state that are doing that as well currently.
Okay. We'll keep marching forward here. I want to get to the money thing, and I want to get the Senate. Senator Morris's amendment, and I want to make sure everybody knows we are not going to get to Senate Bill 248 today. So, thank you for that. This is a key section, and could you explain the policy reason for 90% versus 100% in terms of the pass-through money? in Section 13.
So, Chair Haas, Section 13 is the section I was referring to earlier to Senator George's question, and this is the section the legislature established, you know, by policy that right now an ESD board is directed to expend at least 90% of the amounts, you know, received to the component districts. So, so I believe what this is doing is that if the ESD were to opt out, that then, or rather, I'm sorry, the school district were to opt out, that I think now then they would get 100%. So, I think that's, anyway.
If they were to opt out under this language, we have 90%. And Baker testified that they still get 90%.
Correct.
Even with the savings they can achieve, it still is only 90%.
Correct. That's what Baker testified.
So what is the theory in 90? Why not give a school district who wants to do its own thing 100%?
Chair Haas, one reason would be that, you know, I mean, we believe that ESDs do have a value as far as a regional education service delivery system. I know, you know, the Department of Education does have contracts with them and that kind of thing. There's also some duties in the statutes that they still need to do. For example, this is one of the things that hasn't been mentioned, homeschoolers register with ESDs. That's a duty that they have. So regardless of if school districts opt out, the ESDs still have some functions that they're responsible for.
Okay. Questions? Let's move to 14. This gets back to the Senator Morris's point about the budget committees and the governance structure. Was this one of your amendments?
No, Senator Haas. I believe this came from the House bill that you referenced earlier.
Okay.
But this was tied to one of the concepts that was out there that I referenced earlier was having a very large ESD board, as much as 30 or 40 members.
Right.
One way to avoid that would be to give, you know, those school districts that, you know, didn't have a representative on the board, you know, a chair at the budget committee so they could participate in the ESD.
Okay. All right, and we'll keep jawboning on that governance structure as set up by that House bill. And I want to get to the money and the rates here because this is where the rubber really meets the road. But just to back up one, I noticed, Cindy, in Section 13, an ESD shall expend at least 90%. And then in Section 21, we have, if a school district selects a pass-through distribution, if the school district does a full opt-out from the ESD, they get 100% of their prorated funds. Can you explain the distinction there from Section 13 to that language in Section
21? Chair Haas, I am not sure. I think I would need a little more time with the amendments to be able to explain that one.
Okay.
So I think that was clarifying some things and trying to work it into the formula. But
Mr. Chair,
there
isn't the 90% in Section 13. That's existing statute.
Yes.
Yeah, that's existing statute. So what would you be changing it to?
Well, I'm just
Section 19, I guess.
In the section in 21, Andy, if you know this, Linda, feel free to chime in, says if a school district does a full opt-out, they get 100%.
Well, I think the key term here would be the prorated, which would be their 90%.
100% of their 90.
So that the ESD could not decide, well, we're only giving you 65% or so on.
Okay.
So what in old statute now or in current statute says 90, no one else could make a different percentage.
Okay. I got that.
I think that's what...
Senator Morris, that makes sense.
That's the baseline.
Mm-hmm. The prorated.
Yeah.
100% of the 90%.
Yeah.
Okay, and 18 says the current directors now must leave by June 30th, 2012. And section 19 is the money part. Mm-hmm. This is where the school formula is changed.
Yes.
It's worded in a way that seems more complex, but perhaps you or Brian can tell us what this means in terms of our school formula, the amount the state would spend, and how this works with taxing districts.
Yeah. So this is the school funding formula for education service districts, and it looks like one of the things, excellent, I've got my help, my yes. helper. One of the things that this is doing is that currently the ESD's, their share of the state school fund is 4.75%. So it looks like it's lowering that to 3.56%. So that's one of the changes. And so by doing that, the money then that is not going to the ESD's then would stay in the state school fund, I mean, for it to be distributed to school districts.
Right.
Well, there's one more piece to it, and again, Brian Rainer, Department of Education. Currently, we have a provision in law that says if an ESD's local revenue, in other words, their property tax revenue, is greater than what they get through the formula being the amount they're guaranteed from the combination of both state and local revenue. If they get more than the formula says they're entitled to, they need to take that difference and distribute it to their component school districts. And we've got a couple ESDs that are in that situation right now. If you lower that percentage that goes to ESDs, we may find more ESDs falling into that situation where the amount of revenue they generate locally is more than they would get through the formula, so they would be required to distribute the difference to their component districts. Their component districts then, in turn, in the following year, report that as school district level local revenue. So, in essence, those dollars are shared statewide.
Okay.
And the lower you set the ESD percentage in here, the more of that you're going to create.
And I think this represents a 20% cut. This came from the department. 20%, 25% cut.
That, yeah. And then the other part about this is that this section also somewhat interacts with Section 21 because the first section, there are amendments to the same statute, notice, but the first section goes into effect for the 2011-12 state school fund distribution, so that's the one coming up this year. And so that's lowering it, you know, like 25%. But then in the next section, in Section 21, it is lowering that percentage further, you'll see, to 2.37%. And I believe that applies to the next school year, so that's 2012-13. So it's a more graduated reduction as opposed to just reducing them down to zero or something like that, you know, immediately. It's more graduated to allow for more planning.
Okay.
Can somebody translate this, Mr. Chair, into what its actual impact would be?
You mean reducing 4.75 down to 3.?
Yeah, what that would do to, take for example, Salem-Keizer pulling out, what would that be a reduction for them in funding?
Chair Haas, Senator Morris, the calculations are fairly simple, but I can't do them in my head. So I can certainly get back to you on that. I mean, according to these numbers, Salem-Keizer gets 12-plus million in flow-through dollars and 2-plus million in services. If you reduce that by whatever the percentage decline in the rate is, so that roughly $15 million now, reduce that by 20%, that's $3 million that now would flow to school districts rather than ESD. In the case of Salem-Keizer, $3
million. So overall, statewide, if you're talking...
We're talking $200 million distributed through the formula, you know, biennium statewide. I'm sorry, 200 per year statewide. So,
40.
Whatever
40 million.
20% of that is, yeah, $40 million that would be reallocated away from ESDs to school districts.
Per year.
Per year.
And Mr. Chair?
About
I have a question. I'm sorry, I haven't been able to figure this out. That provision would go into effect whether or not any ESDs opted out?
Senator Bonamici, Chair Haas, that's correct. That's correct. That would apply to, yes, all school districts, all ESDs, regardless of opting out or not opting out.
Okay. I want to keep working on this. We have some labor language that helps employees not get bumped in the case of a merger. And Senator Morris has submitted the dash sevens that I'd like to take a look at now. Senator Morris, do you want to speak to this?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The issues around ESDs have been with us for quite some time. And I believe that something that's been missing in the discussion is the governance structure, because ESDs are pretty independent bodies and have no real overarching governance that looks at the state as a whole within the ESD system. That's my impression. They're all very, very independent. And by statute, we've encouraged them to be entrepreneurial. And some boards and ESDs have performed very well, and some have not. The intent of this amendment would be to create an Office of Regional Educational Services established for the purposes of coordinating efforts and providing leadership for regional educational service districts delivery systems. The board should function under the direction and control of the State Board of Education. This person would serve as the administrative officer of the office. The director shall perform the duties, powers, and functions of the office and shall conduct an ongoing analysis of efforts to increase the effectiveness of the K-12 educational system through operational efficiencies created by education service districts and other regional ESD delivery systems. Proposed state and local policy changes required to increase these efficiencies and recommend changes within the operation and administration of education service districts and other service delivery systems. Conduct annual evaluations of the effectiveness of what we're doing and recommend changes in boundaries or service delivery regions. Provide training, related support to superintendents, the boards, and the governing bodies, and recommend to the Board of Education possible sanctions so that this position would have some authority, subject to approval by the Board of Education, that would maybe move ESDs along in a direction that they need to go, but maybe for whatever reason or not. So, colleagues, I think in looking at the ESDs, that this would be a meritorious amendment to this bill, or in fact, as was proposed in some discussions, that if we address the governance structure statewide, where we're looking at all of these assets, in their totality and how they relate to create greater efficiencies and better outcomes, and address the governance structure within the SDs themselves, that might be the solution to the problem, to identify and then come back with more a more exhaustive or thoughtful or effective changes in our ESD systems, rather than going down the road of trying to figure out the opt-out provisions and who's on first and who's on second.
Colleagues, questions? Department, comments?
Chair Haas, Senator Morse. The department's neutralness, our biggest concern would be fiscal impact, but one of the things that we appreciate about the amendment is that Senator Morse has identified a funding source for this, which would be, I believe, out of the ESD share of the state school fund, and that's kind of in that first section there. So we do appreciate that. The other part of this is that it does feed into the existing kind of penalty kind of section, which would reduce the fiscal impact as well. Existing penalties, just so you have an idea of this, might include withholding state school fund dollars, ordering mergers, that kind of thing. So this feeds into that as well.
And Senator Morris, I know in the original bill, or we have discussed a couple things, and before we leave here, Cindy, your thoughts on implementation of this down the road so schools and ESDs can prepare, starting this notion earlier, but then having what you described as a petri dish that would go into effect next year.
Yeah.
Or Willamette ESD.
Yeah. Chair Haas, Senator Morse, I know that, you know, one of our concerns, and I think I've expressed this kind of today quite a bit, was that we were concerned about rapid change within the system and the harms that that would create, whether it was allowing all districts to opt out, whether it was zero funding for ESDs, or, you know, some of these other ideas that have been swirling. And so where much of the discussion has started has been around Willamette ESD. We'll say it. And so one of the ideas, and I want to emphasize that we are neutral on ESD reform. However, one of the ideas was that, you know, there are some, there's been some concerns raised about opt-out, is to make one of the ESDs the pilot for opt-out. And the one that instantly comes up is Willamette ESD. And I think that, although I think Salem Kaiser's lobbyist is in the room, I don't think Salem Kaiser's been shy about expressing its desire to opt out. So that one immediately came up as a way of looking at the issues over the course of the next 2 years. As your amendments, you know, allow opt-out, I think it's in 2 years. This would give us something to look at in 2 years as we're looking at taking this statewide. So this kind of thing seems to make a lot of sense.
Okay. And those are not in our amendments.
Right.
Yet. Senator Shields.
Mr. Chair, I've got to leave shortly. I was wondering if you were planning on moving these or just having discussion today.
We're just freewheeling. And I, you know, lots of times these kinds of discussions are made in work groups, often in private.
Yeah.
So I appreciate everyone's willingness to.
I appreciate this too, and this has been helpful.
Under the glare of these CFL.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Morris?
If you would allow me, I don't want to occupy the discussion here, but In the amendment as it's drafted, the departing ESD, in this case, if we opted out specifically for Salem Kaiser, you know, presumably they would draw the plan for the remaining districts. And that seems to me to be totally incongruent with meeting the needs of the small districts. And I guess I'm speaking to the merits of this, someone that has the responsibility to look at these issues. Because I really don't care, and it's not important to me, if the large district wants to opt out, What's important to me is that those remaining districts have, in fact, a workable plan, and those children are receiving the service and the quality that they at least presently have. And to have the departing district be the one that actually is doing the planning for those districts remaining seems to be a little bit inconsistent, maybe, with the purposes of opting out.
Well, I would gently push back, and I think the chart that Brian Reeder provided shows that that's not necessarily true in 14 out of the 20 districts, that on a prorated basis, the other districts in Salem, Kaiser, Woodburn, Jervis, some of those others would have roughly the same amount of resources if Salem, Kaiser pulls out. In further, we haven't talked about this, but even if there is a subsidy from a large district to a smaller school district, which I think your research shows there really isn't on the whole in Oregon, but if there is, what's the equity for the taxpayers in Salem-Kaiser? The taxpayers and the parents and the families in Salem-Kaiser, if you ask them about subsidizing students in Jervis or Woodburn, they might say, no, I didn't sign up for that. And so I'm first of all thankful that your research showed that there really isn't a lot of that to begin with, but also I think there's an equity issue on the other side there.
And this is something that's plagued the equalization formula for years. My district in Corvallis has been a donor district. I think this, you know, where you have a high tax base, where at one time Corvallis had, you know, really a wonderful course offerings and a breadth and depth, and they've been constrained because they're a donor. So it goes both ways.
Yeah.
In the equalization, I mean, that's just part of the nature of making sure that the low tax base districts, we have hopefully an equal system of education, which I think our Constitution directs us to have, a uniform system.
Uniform school system. Well, Cindy, your knowledge and your past experience with LC has been priceless, and thank you for that. And Brian, Andy, thank you guys all. We'll be taking more swings at this.
Good discussion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We're adjourned.